begin the current daf mitzvah, the Shabbos daf chaf. We begin two lines from the top of the Yamid. The Gemara now begins to discuss the Mishnah that we ended off the previous daf. Regarding that, we have to complete our cooking before Shabbos, because or else we're concerned that if it's still cooking on Shabbos, there's a gzeir shemichata. Maybe the person is going to see that it still needs to cook a little bit. And they might come to hire the flame to stoke the coals of what they had in those days, and therefore it has to be cooked before Shabbos, because or else we're concerned that you might come to stoke the flames. Tosfos Gemara now asks, Vekama, and how much does it have to be roasted for it to be considered that it's fully roasted and that you're not going to go ahead and continue to stoke the flames so that it should get cooked more? So Amr Lazar Amrav, Kadeshi, it's Ulim, but Uydyim Kemaicha Ben Jasar. That's if it was at least roasted from before Shabbos, the amount that the food of Ben Jasar was cooked. That is, Ben Jasar was a bandit, and he used to eat his food only a third cooked. If it was at least, so to speak, edible for people, that some people eat their things rear, medium rear, which is at least a third cooked, then that would be considered enough that it's person is not going to stoke the coals anymore because it's edible enough. The Rambam says that it's halfway cooked. Rashi says it's a third cooked, but it's definitely not fully cooked. Itmanam, the Gemara brings similarly that we learned that Michael Ben Jasar, as it's called, that the food, the way this bandit Ben Jasar used to eat his food, again, which according to Rashi is a third cooked, and according to the Rambam it's half cooked, that that's already considered that it's cooked at least to an extent, and therefore we're not concerned that you're going to stoke the coals on Shabbos, and that's why you could keep it cooking over Shabbos. We learned similarly on Rav Asi, on Rabbi Yochanan, that kosher k'maicha ben Jasar, anything that is the shear of maicha ben Jasar, that is if it was cooked by a Jew, at least a third cooked, that is the way that it's edible that this bandit used to eat it, then there's not going to be any more considered that if a non-Jew concludes the cooking, that it'll be usher for the halachas of Bishul Akum, of Bishul Nachrim, as the Gemara says, Ein bei Mishum Bishul Nachrim, that's not any more considered that it was cooked by a non-Jew, and that's the same idea, because we already consider halachically cooked, even if it's only a third cooked, that's considered it's mevushal already, so therefore even if a non-Jew concludes it, that's not included in the prohibition of Bishul Akum, and that's why similarly we can keep it on the fire from before Shabbos, if it's at least a third cook, as the Gemara brings, Tanya Lent Nabraisla. Chananya Oimer Kol Shu Kamecha Ben Jasar Mutter Lahashayse Agabekir. Anything that's cooked at least, the edibility, the way it used to be eaten by the food of Ben Jasar, this bandit, and it's permitted to keep it on top of the fire, on the stove, from before Shabbos, and that's V'afapi Shein Gruf V'Kduma, and that's even if it's not shoveled or it's not banked. In other words, it was regarding the halachos of Shabbos. There's two options that you could do to keep food on the stove. Either it could be fully cooked, which what we're calling in the Gemara, in the Shita of Chananya, that's at least a third cooked, or what's called garf or katam. Garf means that it's shoveled out from the coals. There's no more coals in the mo, so therefore there's no concern that you're going to be machata, that you're going to stoke it, because there's no more coals. And what's called katam, which is they used to sprinkle some ashes on the coals on top of it, which would diminish the heat, that it wouldn't add any, that it wouldn't add as much heat on Shabbos. And therefore, that would, so to speak, be two different options of reminding a person or preventing him from coming to stoke it on Shabbos, which is the idea of the current day blech, which is if something is cooked at least a third way cooked, then according to Hanan, you don't need to have a blech, so to speak, as it's called, because you don't need it to be garf or cotton. You don't have to diminish the heat. You don't have to put yourself a reminder that, hey, it's forbidden to go ahead and stoke the coals because it's Shabbos, because it's anyways cooked that much that it's edible and therefore you're not going to do it. Or you can do what's called with a blech, what's garf or cotton, that you could shovel out the coals, or you could cover it, you could bank it with ashes. That would be enough of a reminder that it diminishes the heat, as that's what the blech does. It diminishes some of the heat because it's a thick piece of foil, of aluminum, or whatever it could be made out of. So therefore, what Chananya said is, even if it's not garf or cotton, if it's at least a third way cooked, that's enough because we're not concerned anymore shemichata, because although garf or cotton works for something that's not even a third way cooked, but if it's at least a third cooked, it's going to be mutter to keep it on the fire over Shabbos. Now the Gemara continues quoting from the Mishnah. We said, a niceness a pas, that we say, now I'll put bread in the oven right before Shabbos, unless it's karmu, unless it gets at least crusted the outside of the bread. But Laza said, no, it has to be at least, the bottom has to be crusted. So the Gemara wonders, what is this opinion of Ibalaza? Ibailu, they asked the following question. Tachton heich de gabitaner, is he talking about the bottom? That's the part of the bread that's against the oven wall. A dilma tachton heich de gabi or. Or does he mean the bottom that's facing the fire? And that is the way they used to bake their breads in those days, that they used to slap on, so to speak, the dough on the oil, on the wall of the oven. And therefore the question was, what are we calling the bottom? Is it the facing that's on the bottom? In other words, it's facing the wall. because that's the bottom of the bread that's touching the wall? Or does it mean the bottom of the bread that's facing the fire, which is under it, in the space under the bread? Which one's considered the bottom? So Tashma, the Gemara brings that we learned in the Braiser, Belaza Omer, he says explicitly that it's at least the part that has to be crusted, that's the surface that's attached to the oven wall, and that is a chumrah, that's more stringent, because the side that's facing the bottom, which are facing the fire, that gets crusted quicker. So therefore, we're being pushed up by you. We're saying that it's not enough for that part to be crusted. It has to be the part that's the bottom, that's the surface that's touching the wall. That itself also has to be crusted, and then it would be considered enough that you could have it. If that part is crusted before Shabbos, then again, we're not concerned that you're going to be mechata on Shabbos, and therefore then you could leave it in the oven and continue cooking and baking over Shabbos. But then the Mishnah told us an exception to this rule, that although we can't leave things in the oven if they're not fully cooked, at least kamecha ben jesoy, a third cooked, or that the bread is at least crusted on the outside, or according to Belaza, the bottom, which again, the part that's facing the wall of the oven where it was, so to speak, slapped onto. However, mishalshen as a Pesach, the Mishnah said, where the kahanim were allowed to, so to speak, lower down the Karban Pesach even right before it was starting the Shabbos, the Yom Tov. So my time, what's the reason? Chayrit should be the same as all these things we said forbidden, because you might come to stoke the coals of Shabbos. And the reason is because since the members of the group of the kahanim, they're very conscientious, they're zaras, so therefore they're going to remind each other, they're not going to stoke the coals on Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, halav hochi loy, but if not for the fact that the kahanim were conscientious and they were very careful about the halachas, then it would be forbidden to have the Karban Pesach lowered right before Shabbos. But we learned on Yud Ches Amid Beis, we said the following halacha. Vamamar, God, you're regarding a kid goat, bein sharik, bein loy sharik, whether the oven is sealed or not, shaper dummy, that it's permitted, because we said no one's going to open up the oven because it's going to be harmful. The ear, the draft that comes in is going to ruin the kid goat, and therefore any young meat, you're not going to open up to stoke the coals because it's going to ruin it. And here the Karban Pesach is a gedi. It's something that's within the year, and it would get ruined if it was opened up. So why do we have to say the reason why it's permitted? It's because the kind of conscientious, and there would be mashba, but regular people, if a person was individual that's not a kohen, that's not zoras, it would be forbidden. But it's a gedi. We said a gedi is not a problem. So the Gemara says it depends. Hasa mintach, there where we said that it's permitted because you're not going to open up the oven, that's talking about where it was cut. It was chopped up into pieces. And therefore, if you open up the oven, the draft is going to come in and it's going to be harmful for the meat. Hach over here by the Karban Pesach, loy mintach, it's not cut up. As the Pasuk says, al roishoy val kirboy, and that it has to be whole. And therefore, if you open up the oven, it's not going to be harmful for the draft. And therefore, if not for the fact that there's reason that they're conscientious, it would be forbidden. It wouldn't be like the halacha we learned on Yotav Chesom Abeis, that if it's a kid goat, that you're not going to open it because it'd be harmful, because here, since it's complete, the draft would not be harmful. And that's what we have to come out to the head of his reasoning. Similarly, the Mishnah learned a similar heter regarding the Karban Pesach, the Rumachiz Nesu'ur, that they were allowed to light in the Beis HaMikdash, the fire of the Beis HaMikdash, even right before Shabbos, even if it wasn't the majority of it lit. So Rosh Gemara asked, Menon, where do we know this, that it's permitted in the Beis HaMikdash to light it, even though it's not totally lit, and we're not concerned that they might come to light it, that it should get lit even on Shabbos? So Rav Huna, it's a Pasuk. It says, that a person should not kindle a fire in all your dwellings. It's mashma b'chol mishveseichem yatamavin. In all your dwellings, you're not allowed a lot of fire. Avatamavir b'medurah space on makin. But you could kindle a fire by the pyre of the fire chamber, because that's not your dwellings. This is the base of mikdash, and therefore it's mutter. So the Gemara asks, if that's a correct drasha, so maskev la Rav Chisda, eichach afilu b'shabbos nami. Then even on Shabbos, it should be permitted. It says this is the issur where you know that you're not allowed to light a fire on Shabbos, and that's excluding the base of mikdash. So why are we saying that you're allowed to light even before Shabbos, even not totally lit? You could even light on Shabbos. There's no Isra of Leisavari Eish in the Beis HaMikdash. It's only Mechomai Shreseichem. So the Gemara says, correct. Elam Rav Chisda, Kroak Hi Asa, this Pasuk that's saying a Heter, was Lemishri Evarm Upidarm Hodas. Really, it's coming to tell us the Heter of burning limbs and the fats of the Karbonis, and that is, there you're allowed to burn it the whole night, even on Shabbos. But regarding the Madura, the fire of the Beis HaMikdash, which wasn't, so to speak, a necessity for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was only for the Kahanim, that was not permitted to light on Shabbos. And this idea that we're saying that it's permitted right before Shabbos, that we weren't gezer on it, that, as the Gemara says, for Kahanim is using him. That's because the Kahanim are conscientious, and they're all B'nai Torah, and they're Charedim, they're afraid of the Isurim that could happen. They'll remind each other, and they're not going to do what's called B'machate, they're not going to go ahead and stoke the coals from after Shabbos, and that's why it's similar to the Heter of the Karban Pesach, that they could let it happen even on Shabbos, because they're not going to go ahead and stoke the coals. Then the Mishnah concluded ubigvulin kedusha teches, that regarding the outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there it has to be that at least the majority has to catch on fire before Shabbos. Because if not, we're concerned that you might come to get it going even when it's dark already, when the Shabbos. So now the Gemara asks, my Reuben, what does it mean that most of it has to have caught on fire? So we have a machloikis. Amar Rav. Rav says, Roiv kol echad ve'echad. It has to be the majority of every piece has to have caught on. In other words, not enough that the majority of the piece of wood caught on fire. Rather, each piece, the majority of each piece has to have caught on fire for it to be considered mutter to let it happen and continue on to Shabbos. What we consider the majority is that as long as people won't be saying, bring wood that we should put under it, and that is that they don't have to say to bring these small little twigs that we should put under it, that it should burn up. As long as people are not going to be saying that, that means it's already somewhat a lot on its way getting there. That's already mutter to go on and let it burn on Shabbos. And the Gemara brings Tanur Rav Chiya l'siyur l'shmur. Rav Chiya learned as what seems to support the opinion of Shmuel, that he said, Kedei shetehesh alevis oylem eleh, has to be that the flame will rise on its own. V'loy shetehesh alevis oylem de'abach, and not that the flame should have to rise through the assistance of something else. That's the same idea that Shmuel was saying, that it meant that we won't have to put these twigs to let it, so to speak, support the fire, as long as it's going up on its own, even if not every single piece, majority of each piece, it's considered the majority, the most of it is already on fire, and then it's permitted to let it go into Shabbos like that. A similar machlokes we learn regarding Eitzichid, regarding a single piece of wood, how much has to have been burning to let it, so to speak, be continuing into Shabbos. So Rav Amar Roiv Ovya has to penetrate the majority of the thickness of the piece of wood. That is, it has to go into the majority of the thickness of it. The Amrilan, some say, Beroiva Kefa, it has to, so to speak, to already be encompassing the majority of the circumference. That is, from the outside of the piece of wood. So Rav Papa says, as he does many times, Hilkach be'inan rev avyoi be'inan rev kefa. And therefore, since it's not clear if it has to be through the majority of the thickness or the majority of the circumference, we need both. We need it has to have already been consuming the majority of the thickness and the majority of the circumference. So the Gemara says, Kitanoi, really this idea, if it has to be the majority of the thickness or the majority of the circumference, which seems to be a machlokes tanoim, Reb Chiya Amar, because Reb Chiya says, Kedei sheyishaches ha'eitz mimaleches ha'uman. What's considered that it's already being consumed and that it can continue to Shabbos? That if it's considered that it's already ruined from being used for the work of a craftsman, and that is the majority of the thickness. Reb Yehuda ben Beseiro Aimer, Kedei sheyishaches ha'eitz mishneit stad. It has to be that the fire has caught from the two sides of the piece of wood, which is, as we said, is the other opinion of Rav Akefa, of the majority of the circumference. And so we see that these two opinions of Rav are really a machlokes tanoim. And then Ben Maseira said that, who Ben Maseira said, V'af bishen ra'i l'davar, although I don't have a complete proof to my opinion that it has to be, that it's considered the majority of the circumference from both sides. However, zeich l'davar, there's an indication for the matter. And that is, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel as follows. It says, Eshneket Seisa, the two ends, Achla Esh, the fire consumed, V'toichei Nichar, and that the inside is parched, and that is Hayitzlach L'malacha. So he says, is it still fit for work? And that is like we're saying, that if the two ends are burnt, then you know that the inside is parched, and therefore there's no more moisture, it's therefore totally dry, and therefore that we're saying that that's the pin that he said, that is it still fit for work? That's what he said, that it's not going to be working anymore. That's why, since it's already both sides, that's easily lit and easily going to be burning, and that's why it's going to be mutter to let it continue on the Shabbos, because you're not going to have to assist it anymore to burn. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, that as long as both sides are burning, that's considered that it's enough for it to go into Shabbos like that, and then you're not going to have to assist it anymore, and it could go on its own. Now the Gemara brings related machlokes regarding what's considered that something is being burnt, and what was the reference of the pasuk. The Gemara brings the pasuk in Yirmiyah, which was talks about over there regarding that when Yehoyakim was burnt the Megillah that Yirmiyah sent him. So it says over there, "Ba'ach lefanav mevaras," that the ach was burning before him. So the Gemara says, "My ach, what does it mean ach?" Amarav achvana, it's a reference to achvana, which is a willow. U'shmul ama eitzim shenidluku ba'achvana, it's a reference to pieces of wood that are lit in brotherhood. That's achvana, which means that they're all lit one from the other, that the smaller one lights the bigger one. That's what it means, ha'ach, it means achvana, and Rav says achvana means a willow. So the Gemara brings a story that illustrates this, that achvana is an arava, is a willow, like Rav said, because ahuda amalahu, Man boy achvana. There was this person that was saying to the many people, "Who wants achvana?" And the shtakeh arvasa. It turned out that what he was trying to say, "Who wants a willow?" So we see that achvana is a reference to a willow. Now the Gemara goes back to the topic of regarding of lighting a fire on before Shabbos. Amar Rav Huna says, "Kanim ain't srichin rive." Regarding reeds, there it's not necessary to have that, as we said in our Mishnah, that the majority has to already be lit from before Shabbos. Rather, it's enough if you just got a little bit lit from before Shabbos. And the reason is because they don't tend to go out. Rather, they tend to get even more and more on fire as they go on. So therefore, it doesn't need to have even a rive from before Shabbos. However, if the reeds were tied, then you do need to have a majority of it lit from before Shabbos, because since the flame can't get in because it's, so to speak, suffocated, because they're so tightly wrapped together, then it has to have at least the majority consumed that's consumed by fire from before Shabbos. Garinin, regarding pits, these are the pits of dates that if you make a fire from them, when they dry out, so the halach is in Tzrichin Rav, you don't have to have the majority. Because again, these are things also, they light, they're very dry and they're very flammable, and therefore they're going to light up very quickly. Nasn b'chesalis, but if you put in baskets, and these are different receptacles that they had that were made from different leaves, from lovin, and they would put the whole receptacle in the fire, there the halacha is Tzrichin Rav, that you have to have a majority. And that is, since they're now the date pits are all tied together, they're very tight, and therefore the flame can't get in again because it's suffocated, then you need to have a majority. So the Gemara says, Maskev lo Rav Chizr. Rav Chizr posed a question on this opinion of Rav Huna. He says, Adirab ibch mestavr. It seems to be exactly the opposite of what you said. Kanim, regarding reeds, mevadran, that they scatter, and that is, they scatter here and there. And therefore, if one of them goes out, it's not going to have the other one to burn it up. So therefore, there, where it's not tied together, then you have to have the majority. But if they are tied together, where they're not going to be separate, then you don't have to have a majority. And the same thing regarding the date pits. And that's what he says, call them mevadrim, regarding the reeds which they scatter. So ogdon loy mevadrim, but regarding when they're tied together, then they don't scatter. So then you don't have to have the majority. Garin the mevadrim, regarding the pits, date pits, they scatter. So then you would have to have the majority, because again, if one gets away, then no, they're not going to be able to, like, so to speak, connect the dots and fire up one from the other. But nusle mechaterlis loy mevadrim, rather fakir. But if they put in a basket, then they don't scatter, and then they're going to be one place, and then it's enough even if the majority is not lit up, because they're going to catch on one from each other. But if they're separate, then they're not. So he says exactly the opposite of Rahuna, that it's only if these things are separate that they need rive. But if they're together, then they would not need rive, because then again, then they're touching each other. They're not, so to speak, scattering from each other. So Hit Menam, the Gemara brings, and we continue on to Amud Bey, is that an opinion that seems to have part Rav Huna and part Rav Chizda. Amar Rav Kana says as follows. Konim Sha'ogdim, regarding reeds that are tied together, Tzrichin rive, then you have to have majority. That's like Rav Huna. And that is because since they're tied together, and then, so to speak, the fire gets suffocated, and the fire can't get in there, there it has to have the majority. And that is when not, and however he says, but loyagdon, he says if they're not tied together, then ain't srichin rav, then you don't need to have the majority, because he's not concerned that, like Rav Chizda says, because they're going to scatter, because since they're very long and heavy, they're not going to get so far one from the other, and therefore they will light up one from the other. However, garinin srichin rav, he says regarding the date pits, they need to have a majority. Nasim b'chaisolis ain't srichin rav, but if you put them in the baskets, then you don't need a majority. That's like Rav Chizda, because since they're very easily lit, they're flammable, and therefore, if you put them in the basket, they don't need to have a majority. But without the basket, he says, since they're going to scatter, then a person is going to need to have a majority, which is, again, like by the date pits, then he holds like Rav Chizda, because then they will scatter, versus by the reeds, he holds like Rav Huna, because since they're not going to scatter, therefore they will light one from the other, and therefore, it's going to, when they're separate, it does not need a majority, but when they're together, it's going to be suffocated, again, versus by the date pits, where there, when they're separate, then you need a majority because they scatter, but when they're together, then you don't need a majority, because there, the fire could get in there, and since they're not going to scatter, it's enough even if it's not a majority. So now the Gemara says, the Tanya of Yosef, Arba Maduris in Tzrichin Rav. There are four types of pyres, again, which Madura is always a big fire, a bonfire, so to speak, that they don't need a majority of it lit before Shabbos. And they are shal zephis, if it's from pitch, shal gofris, and of sulfur, shal gvina, of cheese, shal ravav, and of grease, and these things that once they get burning, it's going to burn, you don't need a majority. But misnitatana av shal kashra shal gavva. And in the Braisa we learned that similarly regarding straw and stubble, these are things that also they don't need to have, right? Because once they start burning, they catch on very quickly. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eitzim shel Bavel ain't tzrichin rov. Regarding wood that they use in Bavel in Babylon, they also don't need to have a majority. So Maskav Yosef Mahi, Rabbi Yosef says, what is this wood they used in Bavel that does not need a majority? Ilim is silti, if it's these strips of wood that they used to use, that they used to, so to speak, make it into small pieces, and that's how they used to do in Bavel. How could that be that it doesn't need a majority? Hashta b'sila. Now, if we have the halacha regarding a wick, which is made out of, so to speak, from an article of clothing, that it's dipped into oil and it's very easily, so to speak, lit. And still, Amar Ula Ula says, Hamadlik tzarech sheyadlik b'reiv hayotze, that the one who's lighting it has to make sure for the neir of Shabbos that the majority of the wick that's coming out has to be lit, that's coming out of the lamp. And that's in spite of the fact that it's something that's easily flammable. So silti mebaya, regarding these strips of wood, do you think for a second that that does not need to have a majority of lit before Shabbos? It's not more highly flammable than these wicks. So Elam Rabbi Yosef, what did we mean that the wood of Bavel does not need to have a majority? That is seicha da'arza, that's the cedar branch. And that is, since it's very dry and it's very thin, that what happens is that inside of it there's this woolly substance between the bark and the tree, and that helps it light up very quickly. And therefore, that does not need to have a majority because that's going to be highly flammable, again, because of this woolly substance in between the bark and the tree, and that's why it does not need to have a majority. Rabbi Abam, he says that this wood of bubble was something else that was zaza. This was moss, and moss is something else that's highly flammable, and therefore, that does not need to have a majority. But again, a regular wick would need to have a majority, and all regular fires, besides all these exceptions, if it wants to be lit from before Shabbos, it has to have at least a majority of it be lit before Shabbos, because we're also concerned that one might try to get it going when it's already Chashecha, when it's already Shabbos. Hadnu Lach, Yitzis HaShabbos, this is the end of the first parak of Shabbos. Now we begin the second parak of Shabbos, which is based on the halacha of a pasuk in Yeshaya. It says, V'kuras l'Shabbos oinik, that you will call to Shabbos a day of delight. L'kdoish Hashem mechubit, for the ones that are holy, it's sanctified. And that is, there's two halachas of Shabbos related to the topic of this coming parak, which talks about the halachas of Neir Shabbos, of lighting the candles of Shabbos, which is called Kavod Shabbos and Oinik Shabbos, that it's honorable to have a meal with light, with candles that are lit. And so, moreover, regarding Oinik Shabbos, it's a delight to have that you can see things. And moreover, regarding the halacha of Shalom Bayis, it's necessary that you can be able to see things. So our parak begins regarding talking about the different types of wicks and the types of oils that are necessary to be used, because certain wicks don't light well, and certain oils don't catch the into the wick so well, and therefore we're concerned that a person might have to tilt them and be over on the Isra of Havara on having it, so to speak, being lit on Shabbos. And therefore, it has to be certain wicks and oil that burn well, that a person is not going to come to tilt it on Shabbos and be over on the Isra Dereisa of Havara on Shabbos. So therefore, the Mishnah begins, B'meh Madlikin u'b'meh Madlikin. With what are we allowed to light on Shabbos? And with what are we not allowed to light? In other words, what are we allowed to use for wicks? And these are all the cases of the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to explain what they are. But again, it has to be material that holds the flame. And that is, as we said, shloyata, that a person should not come to tilt it to get the flame getting to go very well, that we can see better. So the Mishnah begins. Ein madlikin loy balechesh. We cannot light with cedar bast. Again, all these different things are talking about what type of wicks. It cannot be from cedar bast. But loy b'chaisen, and not from uncarded flax. V'loy b'cholach, and not from floor silk. V'loy b'psila sa'idin, and not from willow bast. V'loy b'psila sa'midbar, and not from desert fiber. V'loy b'rukash apnei amayim, and not from sea moss. So that is regarding the different types of wicks. Now the Mishnah begins, v'loy v'zephis, and now with pitch. And this is all talking about not wicks anymore, but rather we're talking about using these items as the oil, as the fuel, as what burns the wick. And all these cases from pitch and further are the different psulim, they're things that are not qualified for the oil of Neir Shabbos, again, because they're not easily absorbed by the wick, and therefore it's not going to burn well. So the first one is pitch. V'lei b'shav, and not with wax. V'lei b'shem and kick, and not with kick oil. V'lei b'shem and streif, and not with oil that has to be burnt. V'lei b'alya, not with a sheep's tail. V'lei b'chelev, and not with tallow, which are the type of fats. Nochem Amadi Omer, but Nochem Amadi says, medlikin b'chelev mevushel. You could use the oil, the fuel, with boiled tallow, with boiled fats. You can't use it whether it's cooked or not. If it's boiled, it doesn't make a difference. These chayla fats cannot be used as the fuel for the wick of Neir Shabbos. So now the Gemara now begins to discuss all these different items and describing what exactly they are. So the first item we said that one cannot use as a wick is lechesh. So the Gemara explains, shucha da'arza, it's the bark of the cedar tree. That can't be used as a wick. The Gemara asks, shucha da'arza, it's ba'amahu. It's a regular piece of wood. Obviously, it's not fit to be used as a wick. Rather, it could be used for a bonfire, but it can't be used for a wick. So what are we saying that it can't be used? So the Gemara answers, Amr Nisa de Isper. We're talking about the woolly substance that's there, that this type of woolly substance between the bark and the tree, that can be turned into a wick. That can't be used because, again, it's not a material that holds the flame very well, and that's why it can't be used for Neir Shabbos. Then the Mishnah continued, Beloi b'chaisin. So Amr Rav Yosef, what is chaisin? N'irishal pishtin, it's the tau of the flax, which this is the short broken fibers of the flax that are unsuitable for making linen thread out of them. Those are the things that are discarded. Then they could make a wick out of that. So the Gemara says, Rav Yosef says that's chaisin, and that cannot be used for Neir Shabbos again because it doesn't hold the flame well. So I'm like, Abaya asked Rav Yosef, how could you say that chaisin is n'irishal pishtin? But there's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says, "V'hoya chaisin l'na'iris," that the strong will be as the tau, which was trying to say that the strong will be weak, just like the tau, the na'iris, which is weak and it's not the strong items. So it was saying that the strong are going to ultimately be like the weak. But the point is, as the Gemara says in the parentheses, and some are gurus or not, but the idea is, "Machlal the chaisin lam na'irisu." Obviously, the chaisin itself is not na'iris. And rather, it says that chaisin will be as na'iris. So how can you say that chaisin in our Mishnah is na'irish al pishtan, if they're obviously comparing it, that they're two different things? Elam Abaye, rather Abaye says, kisna d'dayik v'lei nafas. What is chaisin? Chaisin is flax stems that were beaten but weren't combed. And that type of thing, if you make a wick out of it, it won't be, the fabric that will hold a flame well, and that's why it can't be used as a wick for Shabbos. So he said, v'loi v'cholach, and not with cholach. So Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, "Shaltinu l'chol nachisi." I asked all the seafarers what it is. Va'amri kulcha shmei, and they said that it's called kulcha. And kulcha was a woolly substance that was found on the stones in the bottom of the sea. That item that they if they go ahead and make it into a wick, that won't go ahead and hold the flame well. That's one pshat. Another pshat the Gemara brings of what is kolach. Revisa bazira magushkra. It's a reference to floss silk, and this is an inferior type of silk that's made from the cocoon itself, and not from the actual thing that comes out of the animal which makes the silk. So, and then they would go ahead and they would card it and they would spin it and they would make a garment out of it. And it's forbidden to make a wick out of that. And that is, as we said, that all the things that are disqualified to be a wick in the cases of our Mishnah, it's because the fire like jumps on it. It doesn't actually hold it down. And therefore, since it's not a good flame, we don't let you use that for Shabbos. And this term gushkur, Rashi says, is anything that's inferior is called gushkra, as the Gemara in Masechet Skittin calls pasub, and coarse bread also has the same term of gushkra. So this gushkra is this inferior type of a silk that can't be used for the wick on Shabbos. So the Gemara brings a story to illustrate this idea of what is this gushkra, what is this kolach. Ravin v'abaya v'yosef kameder rabbanon Nechemya, who was achud the Resh Galusa, he was the brother of the Resh Galusa, of the head of all the exiles. So he saw that he was wearing a silk garment. So that is the kolach of our Mishnah that's made out of silk that it can't be made to use as a wick. So Abaye told him, we call it frondes silk. So that's what he says, that we don't call it kolach, we call it frondes silk. And that was the conversation. So the Gemara says that, and we're asked on Ravin that he says that silk garment was kolach. We learned as follows. Hashirayim, regarding shirayim, which is a type of article of clothing that's made from regular silk, v'hakolach and kolach, v'hasrikin and corded silk, which is made from soft silk that's corded, chayav metzitzis, all these different garments are required in the halacha of tzitzis. And that is two different interpretations, either that it's not like the one that says that it's only tzemer and pishtim, wool and linen, that are obligated in the halachas of tzitzis. Midaraisa, here this time, Manda Amr says that even these different types of materials are obligated in tzitzis. Or it's even talking about drabbanan. But either way, what we see from here is that shirayim, which is regular silk, and kolach, which is this inferior type of silk, are obviously not the same thing. Shirayim is not kolach. And therefore, how could Ravin have said that this article of that he was wearing, this matzchas, or the silk garment, is kolach, if they're obviously two different things? So as the Gemara says, to Yufta, obviously it's a refutation of his opinion because they obviously are different. Then the Gemara says, Iba Yisim, if you want, you could say that really it's not a refutation. And that is because Shiri Luchud, Vishiri Paranda Luchud, regular silk is one thing, and Paranda silk is another thing, but they're really the same thing, they're just different grades of silk. But when he says, Ahayin Nekalach Masnitin, he meant to say that this is the silk, and they're both really the same category, that they cannot be used as a wick for Shabbos. It's just different grades of silk, and therefore it's not a contradiction. It says Shirayim Bakolach, they really are one category of silk. So then the Mishnah continued, B'loi B'psila Si'idon, that P'sila Si'idon cannot be used as a wick for Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Achvina, that's a reference to a willow, Tana Arava, and that is there's this woolly substance between the bark and the tree, although that can be used and made into a wick, that cannot be used on Shabbos because it doesn't burn well. So the Gemara brings a story to illustrate this. That Rav and Abaye v'ka'azli bepaksit tamarisa. They were walking in the valley of Tamarisa. Chazinu lahana arvasa. So then they saw these willow trees. So Amalei Rav and Abaye. So Rav told Abaye, "Haina Eden d'tnan." That's the Eden of our Mishnah, which we said that it cannot be used as a wick on Shabbos. So Amalei, "Hahi eitz ba'amahu." What is that? That's a piece of wood. How is that fit to be made into a wick in the first place? To say that it's not usable if it's not even a wick. So his kolaf. So he peeled off the bark. And he showed him this woolly substance that's in between the bark and the wood. And that's what he said. That's what we meant in our Mishnah. That this psila si'idan, which is achvina, which again the woolly substance of the willow. That's what we meant. That although you could make a wick out of it, but it's not kosher for Shabbos because it won't burn well, and therefore we don't allow it to be used for Shabbos. The next item in the Mishnah was b'loi b'psila samidba, and not with psila samidba desert fiber. So the Gemara says, what is this? This is shavra. This is nettle. It's a type of a long grass that they can go ahead and make into wick. That again, that won't burn well, and therefore it cannot be used as a wick. V'loi biruka sha'avachul. And the final item was, and not the green that's on the face of the water. So the Gemara says, mahi, what is this a reference to? Ilema uchmasu de charitzi. If it's the dark greenish type that's of the trenches, which is a reference to algae, that is, it think that it gathers in this place where water is stagnant, and there grows over there this type of green things. If ruchim efarchin, the Gemara says, but that crumbles, and therefore you can't even make a wick out of it to say that it's not kosher. So how can you? Why are we saying that as an item that's not kosher? We can't even make a wick out of it. Elam rav papa uchmasu de arva. We mean the dark substance on a boat which grows. That grows on the underbelly of, so to speak, of the boat, which if it sits there in one place, this green grows around the bottom of the boat, which is a reference to moss. And that is that although moss can be made into a wick, it won't burn that well and therefore can't be used as a wick. So Tanu, we learned in the Braisa that Hoisifa Lein Shal Tzem V'Shal Sar. Of all the cases of our Mishnah, we said that are not good as wicks, we added on the Braisa also wool and hair, that they also are usher to be used as wicks. So the Gemara inquires, so why didn't our Mishnah add those two cases also? But Tanda did not, in the Tanda of our Mishnah, Tzemar Michver Chavetz. Regarding wool, it curls. And that is when you try to light on wool, it doesn't burn at all. It just, so to speak, coils, and you can never light a fire on it, so therefore we don't have to include it because it can't be lit in the first place. And regarding Sar, regarding here, Ichruchi Michver, it just burns. And that is never, so to speak, staying over there as a wick does. Rather, it burns and it's not there anymore. So therefore, we didn't have to save those cases in that Mishnah because it's pretty obvious it can't even start to be used to say that they're not kosher as wicks. Now the Gemara continues discussing the Mishnah when it goes into the psulim of the shemanim, of the oils. What type of oils can be used as fuel for the wicks? So we said, v'leiv zephis, and now it pitch. So the Gemara says, zephis, that's zif, so that's pitch. Shava, when we said that shava is not kosher, that's kirusa, that's wax. So the Gemara brings Tana, we learn that Ad Kan, up until here, in the Mishnah, where it says, on Ad Yeruka Shal Panei Amayim, until the green that's on the face of the water, which was a reference to moss, up until then the Mishnah was talking about Psul Pesilas, regarding those that are invalid as the wicks. Bekama Elech, all the items from here on in the Mishnah, Psul Shemanim, are talking about things that are invalid as oil, as fuels, that you can't put the wick inside pitch or wax, and so to speak, in the place of oil as the fuel. So the Gemara asks, Peshitta, is pretty obvious. In other words, we see that those items are not wicks. They're so to speak, they're fuel, and the first half was talking about wicks. Why do we have to say that in a braisa to elaborate on that? So the Gemara says, Shava istruchale. We have to say regarding wax as an oil. And that is, we have to say that the only wax is invalid as a fuel. And that is ma'adutem. I would have thought, lipsilas nami lichazia, that it also would be invalid as a wick. And that is, since many people, they make, so to speak, a tall wick, and they have this wick inside of it, like we make these wax candles, you would think that wax would not be kosher as a candle, kamash malan, that it's only as a fuel, that you're putting a candle inside of it, then it's not kosher. But that it is kosher if you make it as a wick, and that's why we have to say it in that way, that saying all these things from here on are only invalid as fuel, but they are kosher as a wick, And that is the candle, our wax candles are kosher as a candle, in spite of the fact that it would not be kosher as a fuel, because it would not, so to speak, the wick would not draw in the wax into the wick, and that's why it wouldn't be good as a fuel, but it is kosher as a psila, as a wick itself. So the Gemara brings halacha in related to this topic, defining what certain things are. Amar Rabin Bar Oven, Atrana, what is Atrana? That's Psulta de Zivsa, that's the residue of pitch. And Shava, what is wax? That's Psulta de Dufsha, that's the residue of honey. And therefore, the Gemara asks on the top of Chaf Aleph and Aleph, Lamay Nafkamina, what's the difference to define that we were defining what these things are? And that's very simply, Lamekachamimcha, that's regarding buying and selling. That is, someone that tells his friend that he wants to buy Shav. So then he has to tell him, he has to give him the residue of honey. And that's why we have to define exactly what these items are, because when you say a term, you're obligated then to follow up on exactly to deliver that item that was purchased. And that's why I have to tell you and define what exactly these items are.